Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here. It's Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. We are getting close to the NFL season. We're going to start previewing stuff today. Not doing the team-by-team, division-by-division previews this year. I think I want to mix it up a bit. I'm going to hit the preview from a few different angles this year. And I want to start today by looking at teams who might be making a leap in 2018. We're going to look at sort of trying to find teams who might compare to the teams who made their real leap on last year's season. So on defense, you look at the Jaguars, a team that really went from being a pretty good defense to being a dominant defense last year. Offensive side of the ball, we're looking for this year's Rams, a team that came out of nowhere in a lot of ways to have a really effective offense last season with Sean McVay. So we're going to start on the defensive side of the ball. Joining me to do that, someone who is an expert on that topic, former NFL defensive back, frequent contributor to this show, Matt Bowen. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. I always learn so much every time you're on the show. And I wanted to bring you on because you're someone who studies defense really closely. And you're someone who I feel like, you know, not only from your playing experience, but also just watching the league as a whole, you are ahead of the curve, I think, on a lot of things. So I wanted to ask you, because we talked about the Jaguars defense last season and you were in love with it, both their attitude, the way they played, the production. You loved them at all levels, I feel like, of the field. So, wanted to bring you on, trying to figure out if we can find a team who might be similar to this last year's Jaguars. Not necessarily exactly the same, but someone who might take that sort of leap. So, is there a team that stands out to you really at the beginning that might have endure some Jaguars comparisons here on defense?
Well, I think there's a couple teams you can look at, Bill. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we talked about this earlier in the week. Two of them that I see right now, and I think you can even go deeper, but two of them that I see right now are the New Orleans Saints. Mm-hmm. In the Los Angeles Rams. Mm-hmm. And they're different. They're different in because of the roster makeup, and we could talk about that with LA and what they did this offseason. But before we get into that, two more I would add. Mm-hmm. You know, the Houston Texans, because the guys are getting back from injury because of the upgrades they've made in the secondary. Mm-hmm. And also the Chicago Bears.
I'm hoping you were going to say that.
Now, obviously, you know, Roquan Smith needs to, you know, they need to take care of that situation. And
yes.
And that stuff happens in football. People need to understand that, especially with young players and their contract that needs to be settled before you step on the football field. But I think he's a guy that once he gets his reps in camp and starts playing some preseason games, he's a guy that can be in line to be a defensive rookie of the year based on his Georgia tape, based on his fit for the modern NFL with Vic Fangio, what he can do with a talent like that, and the improvement of the Bears secondary and really their front seven. There's some things that have to happen there. Leonard Floyd needs to take that next step as an edge rusher. That's another team to focus on. But the teams we were talking about, you know, New Orleans is interesting to me because really, if you were to say that beginning of last season, in the first 3 week stretch, you would think I'm crazy because they played poor football the first 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. But after that, if you look at, and I looked at a study yesterday, basically 4-15 of last year. Okay, weeks 4-15. They're number four in yards allowed per game, 298.6. They're number two in opponent QBR, 41.3. They're number seven in points allowed, 18.5. And this is a key one for me, number seven in third down conversion percentage. You know, that's the money down in the NFL when you have to get off the field. And I was watching film the other day, and I threw on a game. It was Detroit, New Orleans. And that game was off the rails, okay? It was off the rails. That was a video game, okay? But you look at certain situations. And what I've always thought as a player, as a coach, is the first thing, you have to win plays first. Then you have to win situations. Then you have to win football games. That's kind of the progression for it. There was a situation in that game, early in the football game, when Detroit was backed up. First down, they play man. Tight man covers. So now and they get an incomplete pass. So now it's second and 10. The ball is on the far hash. What do? They blitz cornerback Marshawn Lattimore off the edge. They roll the safety over the top. So they had a cornerback blitz. The running back bounces the ball outside, tackle for a 2 yard gain. Now it's third and eight. And they send pressure again. They blitz the slot cornerback and the linebacker. It's a sack, a strip, and a touchdown. And really, there was a time last year when the Rams blitzing over 40% of the defensive stats.
Wow.
And, you know, it's different because you mentioned Jacksonville. Jacksonville doesn't blitz a ton. They don't. They play covers. They rely on the front four. They rely on the secondary. They rely on their scheme, playing a lot of three deep. They'll play some two deep as well, but playing a lot of three deep. They rely more on that they trust the scheme. They trust the players within the scheme. We look at New Orleans. They're going to come after you. they're going to come after you. And look what they added this offseason. They added Patrick Robinson, who had an excellent season last year in Philadelphia. He's going to be their slot guy. You bring back Lattimore, who, he's the next Jalen Ramsey, in my opinion.
Wow.
One of those top-flight cornerbacks who has the footwork, the physicality. He will tackle, and he's got the ball skills to play man coverage. Ken Crawley at the other corner, an underrated guy that competes all the time. And what they're doing up front. Cam Jordan's one of the best football players in the NFL, Bill. Mm-hmm. He is. There's not many weaknesses to his game. Now, they added the young rookie, Marcus Davenport. I got to watch film on Davenport. I watched him down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. They traded up to get him. I understand why they did it. Maybe that's the New Orleans Saints saying they have a short window with Drew Brees and that offense to make another Super Bowl run. I think it's really another piece of their defense to have another edge rusher. And if you have two edge rushers, now I understand this about Davenport. He is, in scouting terms, pro scouts are going to say he's got raw power and raw strength. What that means is he's not totally developed in terms of his technique, in terms of his pass rush counter moves. Comparing him to Cam Jordan, who's a veteran, like I said, one of the best players in the game, that's great for him to learn from him. It's great for him to go against that offensive line and get beat a couple times in practice and to start developing. Because if they have two bookend rushers, then they can play some more coverage. Mm-hmm. They really can, because they will play some 2D. But I love watching that defense play. And now they have questions at linebacker. They brought in DeMario Davis. I don't think they're great at the linebacker spot. In terms of the second level, I don't think they're, a top linebacking core by any means. But this is how football works. When you have a front four that can get home, or two edge rushers that can get home, you have corners that will drive on the football. You have young safeties, Marcus Williams. Everyone knows the Marcus Williams story from Minnesota and the missed tackle or the misjudged play against Stephon Diggs. I understand that. But look at his body of work. He had an excellent rookie season. All right, they brought in Kirk Coleman, too. He's a veteran player. Did not play his best football last year in Carolina. If you go back a couple years ago, especially when he went to the Super Bowl, he was around the football all the time.
Absolutely.
Having a veteran guy back there that can get people aligned, that can handle adverse situations, that's what you need. And I think they're in a position now where you look at, like I just said, those weeks 4 and 15, can they play like that all the time? Because if they do, with that offense, with the balance they have on offense in New Orleans, now you're talking about, the answer to your question, a defense that can make a jump and be a top five unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The top-level talent there, and guys like Lattimore and Jordan, those guys are really dominant players. I think Davenport's such a key player for them, like you said, because, if he can get pressure, if he can be that secondary pass rusher next to Cam Jordan, then suddenly they don't have to blitz as frequently. They can keep, seven guys back in coverage. So do you think, even given his rawness, do you think Davenport, from what you've seen, can be not a Cam Jordan level player, but at least a number two pass rusher immediately at the NFL level?
Well, here's what I think, Bill. Can he give you disruptions?
Yeah.
And a lot of players in Washington or Greg Williams used to grade on disruptions. Okay, so obviously a sack is a major disruption. But can you alter the path of the ball from the quarterback? Mm-hmm. Can you move him off the spot? Can you make him hit the eject button and get outside the pocket and throw the football away? That's a positive grade in that play. That's a disruption. Would you like him to have seven or eight sacks opposite Cam Jordan? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would. And that would be perfect, because now you got two guys that can get home to the quarterback. I'll tell you about Davenport. Just sometimes you turn on this college film, and he would just take over a play. He'd just throw a tackle on the ground and run right through a tackle, convert speed to power, bull rush him, and put the tackle in the lap of the quarterback. And there's other times you get stuck. You'd be Velcroed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's the part you have to develop right there, because he's not going to be able to do that to NFL tackles all the time. There's going to be times when he does, because he does have that natural power, natural strength at the point of attack. But there's going to be times when he gets stuck, when he gets beat, when he gets shut down on the edge. That's going to be part of his growth at the position, is learning how to disengage there. Mm-hmm. Learning. You watch Aaron Donald on film. It's like you're in a classroom, watching his hand movement. It's amazing. So I'm not saying he's going to be that, obviously, but can you start learning from the greats of the game and saying, okay, that's how they disengage, or that's how they rip through a block, or that's how they set the tackle up, get him on his heel, so now you can do whatever you want with him. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest, I like the pick, and I know Orleans got blasted for saying, why would you move up and do all this and leverage the future of the draft classes, because you think that this defense is a player or two away from making that jump to be in top five.
Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, look at they thought Jairus Byrd was going to be that guy a couple of years ago, and it didn't work out. So, I mean,
right.
it certainly, you know, it's a risk. And with Drew Brees, it's worth taking risks when you have Drew Brees at quarterback, because we don't know what the future is going to look like for New Orleans. But you brought up Aaron Donald. Let's talk about the Rams, a team that had a solid defense last year. Very good. I think seventh in DVOA under Wade Phillips. And then they blew it up. I mean, you still have Aaron Donald.
Yeah,
you still have LaMarcus Joyner, who's very underrated safety. But besides that, I mean, this is a totally different defense. So how do you think all those new pieces are going to blend together under Wade Phillips?
That's a great question. Because I was watching Tomo. And you're watching Tomo. Well, that guy's gone. That guy's gone. That guy's gone, too. You know, so you're almost studying scheme at times when you're watching the Rams tape, because it is a new look. And I think, one, you have to have a strong coach in the secondary. You got to have a really strong coach. And that's nothing to do with being able to get rid of a tough one. I don't care. That tough doesn't matter right now. It's to be able to manage the guys and to start to build that chemistry outside of the offensive line. In my opinion, the secondary is the unit that has to have the most chemistry on the football field, because there's so much communication involved. There's so many moving parts, and you have to play together. And really, in today's NFL, it's not just four guys. It's five or six.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to have nickel on the field. You're going to have dime on the field. You know, anyone in the uniform now who plays DB in the NFL, one, they're usually your top special teams players, and also they're playing.
Right.
They're getting 10, 15 snaps a game because there's so many different packages to counter these modern NFL offenses. So that's the first thing. And I put myself in the coach's shoes. That's going to be a challenge for me, because you have new faces. You have new personalities in that secondary that have to come together. You have Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. Okay. Two guys that play emotional football. That's what they do. I would love the challenge of doing it, because their talent level is exceptional. And it's unique, because right now you look at that secondary, and if that ball goes in there, they're all going to go for it, okay? That's the type of mentality they have. You know, Peters and Talib are excellent, as a term we used to use, lying in the weeds, okay? They're just lying in the weeds all the time, because you never know when they're going to strike. You throw a ball in a flat, you think it's an easy completion, all of a sudden it's going the other way for 6 points. You try to hit that deep hole in cover two, you know, between the corner and the safety, quarterback thinks, okay, I got a 15-yard gain here. Move the chains. No. They sink, they bait you, and they go get it. You brought up Joyner. I'm glad you did. I mean, Joyner, why don't we talk about him more? You know, and I understand. We talk about the great safeties. You know, we talk about Earl Thomas. We talk about Harrison Smith. I mean, they're great players. But what about Joyner? He's an excellent football player.
He's
got great
last year.
He's got good range. Yeah. He tackles. I was watching film the other day, and you know, division of the wild card round against Atlanta, and a couple times the run broke. I mean, he's not just trying to get it done. He's not putting a form tackle on. He's dropping pads on. He can get over the top from the post. He can play cover two. He's got coverage ability too. So there's a lot of different things that Wade Phillips can do with him. You know, from a game plan perspective. But going back to that second, I mean, that's a challenge. I would love that challenge as a coach. I wish the Rams would call me today, man. I get on a plane right now, Bill. I go out. Say, let's go work. Let's go practice. Let's see what we got. Because I want to see what happens when things go bad. Because that's part of football. Things are going to go bad. I mean, it's pro football. You're going to lose games. You're going to have tough moments. You're going to have guys who are going to have to play when they're a little banged up, a little hurt. That's what I want to see with that secondary. Because on paper, because of the skill set, and because of the versatility and the ball skill, that could be one of the best secondaries in the NFL this year. But you have to see how they handle adversity. And I'm betting that they do handle adversity. Because with Wade Phillips running that side of the football, I think it's going to be so much fun to watch. One, how he game plans, but how he manages all those people. And he's excellent with players. If you're going to say, look, I'm going to put a very, you know, a unique secondary on the field that plays emotional football, Wade's the coach you want with him. You know, up front with L.A., you know, let's just assume that Donald is there for week one. And that's the tough part about this conversation. I understand why he's holding out. I would, too. I'd send the Rams front office my tape and say, well, here's my resume. You know, what else do you have to do, Bill? You don't have to do anything else.
Right.
That's how good of a player. You know, here. Aaron Donald, we did a roundtable the other day for ESPN, is he the best defensive player in the NFL? My answer was he's the most disruptive player in the NFL.
Yep.
And that's a term I would love to have, you know, if I was him. I'd love for people to say that about him, because disruptive means a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It means you're impacting almost every play. That's what you're really doing. Almost every play you watch the Rams film, and there's guys that get sacks because he gets doubled and they run a twist there. He gets doubled, pushes the pocket up the field, and you know, an outside linebacker can scrape underneath or a twist up or adjust their path, and now they're getting sacks. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get those if you were playing necessarily just an average defensive tackle.
Right.
But he benefits the entire defense. Now you add Sue, and that's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Because you can't double both, right?
Right.
You can't double both. And that's been the discussion all offseason. Well, you know, the Rams don't have the edge rushers. You know, they don't have the edge rushers. But if you have two guys inside that are unblockable, or two guys inside that demand extra attention and every single threat, well, like we just said, now guys are going to play at a higher level than they're expected on the edge, because they're going to get more one-on-ones outside.
Oh,
you know, that's just how football works. And that's also going to improve your second level as well. Mm-hmm. You say, well, you know, the Rams struggled a little bit against the run last year. They did. They weren't great against the run last year. And now Alec Ogletree is gone. But I think what you're going to see from L.A. is they're going to play a bunch of nickel. I really believe that. I think that's going to be their base formation. I think they'll play more nickel than people expect. They're going to get athletes on the field at the second level. They're going to let their defensive tackles win inside, and that's going to benefit the entire defense. And also think about this. You have Tlaib and Peters. If they're locking down guys on the outside, you have LaMarcus Joyner over the top. Well, naturally, rushing coverage has always been a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to get more pressure on the quarterback when the quarterback's going to hold the ball and eat it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So if you were an offensive coordinator playing the Rams and you have to worry about Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald on the interior, how are you game planning to block them? What are you thinking about doing schematically that's going to avoid getting your quarterback killed against probably the best two interior pass rushers in football?
A lot of movement passes, a lot of misdirection, a lot of play action where you get the quarterback scooting outside a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing I would do. I run a lot of boot. I run a lot of sprint. I get the quarterback as far away from those guys as possible. But eventually, and that sounds great, right? It sounds great. You can't mm-hmm. run boot 75 times a game.
Right.
You just can't. So eventually you're going to have to drop back in the pocket, whether you're under center or out of the gun. But yeah, I think a lot of teams will offensively will act as the old West Coast offense, is try to get the ball out quick.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of 3 and 5 step concepts. They give the quarterback clear reads and say, look, this is where the ball's got to go. This is where the window's going to be versus zone coverage. This is the window we're going to create for you versus man coverage. Because mm-hmm. if you hold that ball, you're not going to finish the game.
Nice.
That's what I tell my quarterback. You hold the ball, I got to get the number two ready, because you're not going to finish the football game.
That's true.
Let's go. Get the ball out in time. Be on time. Look, we're going to run a lot of edge runs, a lot of stretch, a lot of outside zone to get away from those defensive tackles. But off that, we're going to run the play action and movement. But when we have to drop back, you better get that ball out of your hands.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you brought up the Bears earlier, and you brought up something else that I wanted to talk about when it came to the Bears, because I actually thought they might be a candidate for this as well. This is the first time, I believe, I look back, I'm pretty sure this is accurate, first time since the Charles Tillman, Tim Jennings days where the Bears bring back the same 4, even 5 starters in the secondary. And you brought up how important communication and continuity is there. Is that really going to be a thing that's going to propel them forward, or is it more about what we see from the front seven for Chicago?
I think the front seven is going to be critical for them, but the secondary, they played so much better football last year.
Absolutely.
You know, Eddie Jackson made a lot of plays. Eddie Jackson was a rookie out of Alabama who slid in the draft because he had some injuries in college, and it's understandable. That's how the draft works. But he was around the football. And I was talking to someone the other day, when you're around the football, you're there. That's because you're there for a reason. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you finish the season with 7 interceptions and all of them are tip passes that fall in your lap. I don't care. You know how hard it is to do that? That means you're around the ball all the time. You're in the proper position. You're taking the right angle to the ball. You're breaking at the right time. You know where the ball is being thrown. That's a positive. He was around the football a lot last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adrian Amos is a downhill player. That's what he is. He's physical. He's 200-plus pounds. He'll put his pads on you. That's his role. He's never been an elite playmaker. I don't think he ever will be an elite playmaker, but he fits in that role for Chicago. You know, and Kyle Fuller, I told someone earlier today. I mean, he was playing in the Matrix last year. Okay, he was like Neo dodging bullets. Okay, and that's what happens with DBs who grow up in the NFL. And all of a sudden, the game starts to slow down for you. It starts to slow down for you, just like Neo. You know, you see things before they happen, and what does that do? That makes you a faster football player. Now you're breaking before the ball is thrown, and now you're finishing plays. That was the biggest jump for Kyle Fuller last year. I think that's why he got the money he was paid in the fourth season, because other teams recognize it too. That this is a guy who has a first round skill set. He was a first round player, top half of the first round. I think he went number 14 overall. Brandon was a different front office back then for Chicago with general manager Phil Emery, but talent is talent. Yep. And he also went through some adversity. So he had a knee injury, and you know that one year, that was a rough year for him. Mm-hmm. That was a rough year for him. And he did not play a lot of football. He was not on the football field. For a lot of young players, Bill, that would bury them. It would bury them. They play a couple more years in the league, be a special teams guy, play a backup role. He came back and earned that job and played like a starter and played like a top-tier pick should. Okay, and again, I'm not putting Kyle Fuller in the same discussion with Patrick Peterson or Jalen Ramsey right now. I'm not saying that. But he played at a level that other teams recognize, and eventually teams are going to have to game plan against. But really, that secondary in Chicago, I mean, it's not the Jaguars secondary. It's not. And people don't talk about him like the Jaguars secondary. But under Vic Fangio, what he can do defensively, I think they really improved. And the key thing for them was to finally start making some plays in the football. They haven't for a while in Chicago. So to start making some plays in the football, and now granted, it goes back to that front seven again, and messing that rush and that coverage together. But they have the makeup of a defense that can be, we were talking about jumping the top five. Maybe they don't jump into the top five, but can they be a top 10 unit? Sure.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a team that last year, 11 interceptions, or 11 turnovers, I should say, in 2016, dead last in the NFL, 22 last year, so doubled their total from the previous year. So let's finish up here a couple minutes. Let's talk about the Texans, a team that certainly, you know, if I'm going to list the names on that roster, it's going to be pretty good. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus, Tyrann Mathieu, Kareem Jackson moving to safety. You know, a lot of first-round picks, a lot of second-round picks, a lot of talented players on this defense. Is there any reason you think they can put it together this year under a new defense, or actually under Romeo Crennel playing a more meaningful role this year with Mike Vrabel moving on?
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, it does start with the names. It always does, though, right, Bill, in pro football? I mean, it's always players over X's and O's. In critical moments of the game. It just is. There's only so much you can do with 11 guys in the field. You and I could drop coverages all day, but you got to have the players execute those coverages and those pressures. Getting Mercilus back is huge. Having J.J. Watt healthy is huge. And J.J. Watt, even if he's 80% of the player we knew before the injuries, he's still a dominant football player. Clowney. I mean, Clowney. Go watch the film of I watched it the other day. Houston and New England last year, I watched Clowney. I mean, he was awesome. He was awesome. He made some plays where he just took over. Took over plays. One play. It's like we were talking about before. He can win plays for you. And, you know, what the most interesting thing for me with Houston is the secondary. Because they add Tyrann Mathieu. And I'm so excited to watch him play. Because I think if you watch really, I'd say the last four or five games of 2017, the speed came back. You started seeing more of the change of direction ability coming back. And that's what happens with a knee injury. It takes time. It's not only to gain the confidence of playing the game of football again, but it's to gain that explosion that you must have to play in the NFL secondary. And if he's back playing at the level I think he can play at based on the latter part of 2017, he's one of the league's dynamic playmakers. That's what he is. He's got natural awareness, natural ball skills, stuff you can't really teach if you're a coach. You could try to say, look, go play like Tyrann Mathieu. You know, players will be able to coach you crazy. I can't do that. So, he's got things he can't teach. That is interesting to me. Bringing over Aaron Colvin from Jacksonville, getting that built into your secondary. And that's what matters. When you bring guys over from winners, that matters to me. You know, people say it doesn't matter. I believe it does. We talked about with L.A. and building chemistry. Bring guys over that have won, that have played on top defenses, that can show your younger players, even your veteran, even if that guy's played 10 years, they can learn something from himself, okay?
Of course.
That's what I did in Jacksonville. Or that's the tempo they practice at, or whatever it may be. Certain things like that matter to me. from a coaching perspective, and then that of the player. Mm-hmm. I think that if you look at Houston, they do have the makeup to jump into that top five. I really believe they do. Again, health is key. These guys got to be on the field. But if they're on the field under Romeo Crennel, who has done this for a long time in the NFL, now you pair that with having Deshaun Watson back on offense. Man, I mean, this is a team that could compete for a division title. And they should compete for a division title. But let's be honest. They should be a playoff team. If everyone's healthy in Houston, they should be playing in January.
Yeah. And they're going to get a break, too, because they're not going to have – if Deshaun Watson's healthy, you know, they're going to have more time on the sidelines. It's a defense last year that had to face 187 drives, which is a bunch more than league average. So this is a team that they weren't getting a lot of breaks on defense. They had injuries, and then on top of that, they were facing a lot of three and outs on offense. So they were really on the field a ton. So a little bit more rest for them, and, of course, healthier players, and certainly it seems like they can take a leap and back into the top 10 where they were a couple of years ago. So not that far removed from being a really good defense. But, Matt, I think we're out of time, but as always, a pleasure. Where can people check out more of what you're working on?
Well, they can always check out, on Twitter. During the summer on Twitter, I post a lot of videos and kind of teach a little bit and show some examples. So that's at MattBowen41. And I'll have some columns coming up soon over at ESPN.com on the Insider page. Looking ahead to the NFL season, doing some cool stuff. We have some cool stuff coming up.
I'm excited. Well, if you want to learn more about the NFL, you heard him for a half hour here. Check him out on Twitter. Matt Bowen, always a pleasure. Always learn something listening to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we're going to come back with Ted Wynn here after the break on the Bill Barnwell Show. First, guys, you know football season's on the way. We're in the middle of baseball season. Sports are coming up. Sports are here. Sports will continue to be happening, and you will continue to want tickets to sporting events. Me, personally, I have to admit, I'm going to check out the Red Sox-Yankees series in a couple days. And you know me. You know what I did when I went to go get tickets for the game. I didn't go anywhere else. I went to SeatGeek. Of course I went to SeatGeek, because SeatGeek's been sponsoring the show for a long time now. And SeatGeek is the absolute best place to buy tickets on the internet, because they're going to search ticket sites from all over the web. And then they're going to use their deal score technology. They got that algorithm working. And they're going to rate the tickets so you know you're getting a good deal. The tickets I got, pretty sure they were a 99. And I feel very confident that I'm going to have a good time, because SeatGeek let me know I was going to get a good deal, and it's going to get tickets to me reliably and affordably. I got a great price, and if you want to get an even better price than I got, you can use my promo code, which I have already maxed out. I have no more uses of my promo code because I have used it. If you want to use my promo code, which is Barnwell, go to the SeatGeek app, go to purchase tickets, enter in promo code Barnwell, and you'll get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase. So whether your tickets are $8,000, whether they are $21, you can get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase by using my promo code Barnwell today. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm still Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We just talked about defenses with Matt Bowen that are likely to break out in 2018. Let's get to the offensive side of the ball, and joining me to do that, frequent contributor to The Athletic, frequent contributor to this very podcast, Ted Wynn. Ted, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about some offenses, talk about some real football coming up in 2018. And you're someone who you've written about Sean McVay's offense a bunch with the Rams. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about teams that might be able to break out in a similar way to the Rams this upcoming season. And we talked about this a little bit in advance of the show. And the one team you brought up that seems like a pretty obvious choice, and we'll get into why and why they're obvious and why they might not work out, possibly, is the San Francisco 49ers, where you have Jimmy Garoppolo, you have Kyle Shanahan, you have, the two core pieces of a good offense in place, you would figure, with a great head coach, a great offensive mind, and a great quarterback. So what else about the Niners makes you believe that they're going to be a possible breakout team here on offense in 2018?
They added a lot of pieces to their offense. And like you said, they have the two main ingredients you need for a really good offense. And they have, I think one of the best play callers in the league in Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. We all saw what Garoppolo could do, even last year when he was just learning the playbook. He's just amazingly accurate. He's able to make plays with his feet. He's a natural leader. Mm-hmm. On top of that, they added to the offensive line. They have McGlinchey at right tackle, which could be a better fit than Trent Brown was. They have they added Richburg at center, which I think is a huge upgrade at the center position, which is really vital in this offense. Mm-hmm. And they added some really versatile chess pieces to their offense, like Dante Pettis, and Jerick McKinnon.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely, it seems like a real emphasis on this offense on guys who are really versatile, guys who can move inside and out of different wide receiver positions, guys who McKinnon and Juszczyk, where I certainly have issues with their contracts, but guys who, you know, can catch the football, can do multiple things in this offense. And the offensive line's really interesting because you think about Atlanta and Kyle Shanahan. That first year, they really struggled. I mean, there was people who thought Kyle Shanahan was going to get fired after that first year, and they brought in Alex Mack, and he totally transformed that offensive line. So do you think Rich Burke can have that kind of impact? Is he that good of a player where you think he can really, you know, transform this offense overnight and take it to another level?
I think, you know, with Alex Mack coming to Atlanta, there was a combination of things that really had that offense take off, but Alex Mack certainly was a big part of it. And when you're running the outside zone, having a good center really helps because – you know, if you don't have to help the center out with the guard's free to help the tackle or get to the second level much quicker, and that just changes the geometry of the run of the offensive blocking scheme. It just makes things easier for everybody, which, you know, could really help the run game take off. And the Niners, you know, they were okay on offense last year, and they played much better towards the end of the year, but they really didn't have a consistent run game at all, and that's such a big part of Shanahan's offense to get the run game going, and then the play-action boot game off of that. So if Rich Burke, I think Rich Burke will make an impact on the run offense. A little more familiarity with the outside zone scheme will help improve in that area as well. I don't think they need the run game to be dominant, but they need it to be at least consistent and a little more effective.
Yeah, I think it needs to certainly be a threat at least to create those play-action opportunities. How do you see them using McKinnon? I mean, obviously he's going to take some snaps as a primary running back, but do you think he's going to move all around the field? Is there a player in Shanahan's past you think he might compare to in terms of how he's going to be used in this Niners offense?
Yeah, I think he's going to be moved all over the place. I mean, I think he's, first of all, I think he's a better fit in this outside zone scheme than Carlos Hyde was. Hyde was, you know, he's a good player and he runs hard, he breaks tackles, but you know, his vision was a little inconsistent and his ability to cut is not as good as McKinnon. So I think just as far as being a better fit in this run scheme, I think McKinnon's going to improve in that area. But yeah, just I can tell you just from being at Niners training camp and mini camp and OTAs, McKinnon's going to move all over the place, going to motion all over, motion outside the backfield. They really like his ability as a wide receiver, and he's not just a guy that you just, you know, put in space and catch screens. He could run routes. He could actually run, you know, slant routes, comeback routes, and have a varied route tree. And that makes him really dangerous as a guy you split out, you know, if you're, especially if you're playing a man-to-man team where a linebacker's on him on early downs. If you split him out, it's going to be a mismatch every time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it seems like this is a situation where they're going to use a ton of motion. They're going to try and get guys like McKinnon and Juszczyk and even your George Kittles and your Garrett Celek's matched up one-on-one against mismatches and just hit those guys. And certainly, you know, with Jimmy Garoppolo last year, he was able to find those weapons and make plays. Anything you're thinking about that might cause them to maybe fail to hit sort of the things we might envision in our heads when we think about them heading into the season? Is there one weakness or one element of this offense that you think might cause them to be not as impressive as maybe they look on paper?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think one, you know, that there's could potentially be three new starters on the offensive line. I think some of the players could be upgrades, but at the same time, you don't know how they're going to gel, especially early in the year with three new starters. So that could be a problem. And they don't have much depth on offensive line as well. So if somebody gets hurt, they could really get in trouble, especially at the tackle position. And they don't have a, you know, a dominant blue chip, player or receiver you could just go to and, you know, throw jump balls to, or just say, this guy's going to win his matchup every time. You know, like we talked about, they have a bunch of really versatile pieces, but they don't have that go-to guy. They don't have like a Julio Jones or Gronkowski type of receiver they could just rely on. So I think that, you know, that they just don't have that go-to guy. That could be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly fair to say they're getting Pierre Garçon back after he missed a good chunk of last season, which helps. Marquise Goodwin had a breakout year last year, really impressed it a lot more than I ever thought he could have done as a pure wide receiver for the Niners last year. But I do think those guards are a question mark. Look at Laken Tomlinson, a guy who, you know, was not especially impressive in Detroit. Jonathan Cooper, who, you know, again, struggled in Arizona, kind of a post-hype player. And then Josh Garnett missed all of last season with an injury, and you know, he's not that great as a rookie. So, you know, you could see it work out. These are three former first-round picks, a lot of athletic talent there, but You know, certainly not the sort of refined guys you might hope for in a scheme where, you know, it is at times more about technique perhaps than about size and bulk. So we'll see. I mean, a really interesting offense and I think one that should get better. We'll see what happens with the offensive line in terms of their ceiling and how high they can get. But outside of the Niners, I mean, another obvious team you'd figure, and I think I'm not talking out of school here and saying the Houston Texans might be a team that if they can get Deshaun Watson healthy for more than 6 or 7 games, this could be one of the best offenses in football.
Yeah, I mean, Watson put up unreal numbers in his limited playing time. And, yeah, he's just really accurate, extremely smart, very, very poised for a rookie. And Bill O'Brien just did a really good job of kind of mixing the spread offense with some pro concepts, created a really strong play-action game out of spread formations, which is really tough to do. And, yeah, Watson just thrived in offense, so it's really curious to see if he's healthy and get back to that level of play.
Yeah, I think just the concern there for me is it's not the talent. I mean, the receiving talent's very solid. Lamar Miller really looked a lot better when Deshaun Watson was at quarterback, and Watson, of course, is a force of nature in his own right. I think the concern there, even more so than San Francisco, is the offensive line, which, I mean, you're looking at a lot of rookies. You're looking at a lot of guys who are unproven. They did add Zach Fulton. But, I mean, outside of Nick Martin, their center, who I think is pretty underrated, you're not looking at much of an offensive line. So do you think Watson is so transcendent of a talent that he can overcome one of the league's worst offensive lines, or is it just the line's going to drag everyone down regardless of how good you are at quarterback?
I think that's the question. I mean, especially with Watson coming back from an injury, is he going to be as mobile as he was before the injury? And, you know, could he get hurt again if he, you know, keeps taking hits? Because, like you said, there's big question marks around the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the things they did last year, you could consider it a little gimmicky just because we haven't seen this type of offense work long-term in the NFL with that, you know, relying on that much of a spread option. We've seen offenses have success with the spread option being a small part of the offense, you know, maybe being 20% of the offense, but can it be this big part of the offense and continue having success?
Yeah.
Question, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly up in the air. But again, even if they aren't as sort of incredible as they were last year, even if they're not the sort of otherworldly offense we saw last year, even if they dropped down 10 or 15%, they were the best offense in football in terms of points per game when Watson was in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And they were the worst offense in football by points per game when Watson was on the bench or injured. So I'm hopeful. I don't think they need to be the best offense in football, but they could be, you know, 6, 7, 8. And if you add that to a defense that should be healthier, that could be a scary football team. We talked about them with Matt Bowen in the first part of the show, where we talked about how their defense would take a leap forward. They could be a team where if everything goes right, that's possibly an 11-12 win football team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they have some really interesting pieces on that team, both on the offense and defensive side, but, you know, a bunch of question marks as well. And yeah, that stretch where Watson was healthy was just unreal. And it's just, I'm really curious to see if they can keep that level of execution up for the entire season.
Yeah, for sure. So we talked about the Bears also in the first half of the show on defense. What do you think about their chances on offense? Of course, they've added Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, drafted Anthony Miller, signed Trey Burden, very solid running back duo in Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. They're moving Kyle Long, and hopefully he'll be healthier this year at guard. I mean, are you optimistic about their chances with Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich as offensive minds of becoming a, you know, if possibly not a top 5 offense, at least maybe approaching the top 10 or maybe 10, 11, 12 in that range?
I think, you know, they have a lot of interesting new pieces, and I love that the forward thinking and bring in Nagy and then Helfrich to kind of modernize that offense. But there's a lot of new pieces, and Mitch Trubisky is just a second-year player, and you know he showed some promise last year, but he didn't show anything close to what Watson was doing. So I think to say that they would go to the top 10 that quickly is a stretch for me. But like I said, they have a lot of interesting pieces. But if they could get around 16, 15 in total yardage, I think that'd be a huge step up for them.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, certainly, you know, Mitch Trubisky is someone who we still know so little about. A guy really only played 1 year at North Carolina and had a half season last year. And the beginning of that half season, that offense was, you know, about as limited as an NFL offense is going to be in terms of asking the quarterback to throw the football. So It's still up in the air. He could still be an incredible prospect, and he could still be someone who's not qualified to play quarterback at the NFL level, and I don't think anyone knows yet. So really fascinating opportunity coming there in Chicago. Is there someone else who comes to mind for you as a team that you're really intrigued to watch on offense this year?
Yeah, the Tennessee Titans with LaFleur over there now, and Mariota coming into, I believe, his fourth year, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so he'll be coming into his fourth year, and LaFleur is going to kind of install that outside zone system, heavy play action system. They have a strong offensive line, and you know, a lot of people are really excited about Derrick Henry. So if they could get the run game going and get Mariota on bootleg passes and create opportunities for him that way, I think they're a really they have some potential to be a good offense as well.
Yeah, I do think the concern with Mariota is not necessarily his talent, but it's injuries. You know, this is a guy who, even last year, he played 15 games, but he was not 100% for a good stretch of that time. So I love the talent there. I think if everything breaks right, this could be a really impressive offense. The offensive line is really valuable. You do have Jack Conklin coming off for torn ACL. Not sure he's going to be ready for week one. Delanie Walker's still a very effective tight end. Corey Davis, former first-round pick, I look at the fifth overall pick in the draft a couple years, or last year. So, you know, someone who it would not shock anyone if he took a big leap forward in year two. And then added Deion Lewis, who, outside of injury concerns, a really... You know, a player who is so valuable and so effective in so many different ways, and has plenty of experience successfully running the outside zone from New England. So, I think the upside there is super high, but it does seem like injuries might be the big concern in preventing an offense from hitting the heights that it might seem.
Yeah, and they were another offense that really heavily relied on spread concepts and option football. So, you know, maybe with moving away from that a little bit, I mean, I'm sure it'll still be part of the offense, but moving away from heavily utilizing that, maybe that could be good for Mariota's health moving forward.
Mm-hmm. What about the Giants, a team that's getting a lot of attention? Of course, they're bringing back Odell Beckham from injury. They've added Saquon Barkley and Jonathan Stewart, running back. Evan Engram really impressed as a rookie last year in terms of his targets. And then offensive line is still a major problem, but they did sign Nate Solder, did draft Will Hernandez in the second round, so they've added some stuff to the offensive line. They did lose Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg in the process. Is the offensive line still too much of a problem for you to really believe in the Giants making a serious impact on offense? Or do you think that the weapons they have are so overwhelming that teams are going to struggle to keep up?
I think that, you know, they certainly upgraded their offensive line, but I don't know if I could trust the depth of their offensive line. But if those guys could stay healthy and not have any major injuries, I think they could be serviceable with the weapons around Eli. They could certainly be pretty explosive. And, you know, with the thing with Eli Manning, you don't know exactly which Eli you're going to get. You know, sometimes he comes out and has a really brilliant year, and other times he just is way too turnover prone. But those weapons on, you know, they're so loaded with, you know, Odell Beckham on outside, Evan Engram on inside, then you have Saquon Barkley causing matchup problems inside. They have so many options. So it just depends on the health of their offensive line and if Eli could keep the turnovers down.
What do you think about the fit of Mike Shula with Eli Manning in that offense?
I wouldn't say I know enough about Mike Shula or studied his offense enough to really give a good take on how I think Shula fits that that personnel.
That's fair. That's totally reasonable. What do you think about, on the flip side, maybe about Norv Turner in Carolina, where he's taking over from Mike Shula, and Cam Newton is someone who has an incredible amount of skill, but I think there's still this perception, it seems like, that people haven't unlocked the most out of Cam, which is crazy to say for an MVP candidate, but we're seeing some reports from Carolina this offseason that the Panthers might consider moving on from Cam Newton if he doesn't take a step forward with Norv Turner as his offensive coordinator. Do you think they have the personnel to kind of run that offense where they can, you know, stretch teams downfield and hold up in pass protection long enough for Cam to hit guys 15, 20 yards downfield?
That's a really curious fit with Norv Turner in Carolina. Just because his offense has been so reliant on a strong, power-heavy run game and deep play-action passes that take more time. And I just don't know if they have the offensive line to really run the ball that Turner wants to run the ball and hold up in play-action, getting guys downfield on those play-action concepts. And Newton's a great pocket passer as well, but his strength is running the ball with some spread concepts, and I don't think Turner's really shown that in his playbook before. So I don't like that fit. So yeah, I think Cam Newton's a great quarterback. I think it'd be a mistake if they did move on from him, but I just don't know if that fit is going to work out well with Turner and Newton.
Yeah, it does. It did surprise me just because, like you said, Cam, he's Cam at this point. We know what he can do. You figure you want to get a head coach or an offensive coordinator who's going to play to those strengths. But I, you know, even before the Darrell Williams injury, and that's going to cost them probably their, you know, a very solid right tackle for the season. Even if he plays, he's not going to be the same guy with that dislocated kneecap. And then they lose Andrew Norwell, their first team All-Pro left guard. You still have Trey Turner. You still have Ryan Khalil. So you still have a pretty strong interior, but major question marks about that offensive line. So I'm intrigued. I mean, I they're going to be either it's really going to work and we're all going to seem really stupid, or it's going to be a really bad mismatch and we're all going to say, well, we should have known that was coming. So I think they're going to be one of the more fascinating teams to watch on offense this year in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. And it'd be a shame if they ended up having to choose Norv Turner over Cam Newton at the end of all this. But we'll see how it goes.
I think I know who I would choose. It's just me. I'm not the NFL professional here, but I think I would go for the MVP over the offensive coordinator who seems to hire all of his family members when he goes to go work at a place. But I don't know. Just me. One more team I want to ask you about, and then we'll finish up. Not saying they're going to have a breakout situation. They're going to be a top five, top 10 offense, but one team I'm really intrigued to watch this year after adding Todd Haley, trading for Tyrod Taylor, drafting Baker Mayfield. What do you think about the Cleveland Browns? I mean, are they an offense that you think can be competent this year after really looking just totally out of sorts last year with DeShone Kizer at quarterback?
I'm a big Todd Haley believer. I loved what he did in Pittsburgh. I always thought his play calling was, you know, brilliant, but you know, obviously in some situations he had some questionable play calling, but I mean, overall, his play calling and play designs were among the best in the league. So I really like what he did in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure how Tyrod Taylor fits in his offense, just because we've watched Ben Roethlisberger execute that offense for so long. And Ben Roethlisberger is obviously a much different quarterback than Tyrod Taylor. So I'm curious to see how he will tailor his offense to Taylor, and Mayfield kind of has a similar skill set to Tyrod as well. But they do have some pieces with, over there in Cleveland. I don't know what the Josh Gordon situation's like, if he's going to return and with a little time off, but he could be one of the best receivers in the league. They have a few skill players there that are really intriguing as well. Njoku, a tight end. And who's their running back?
So they have Carlos Hyde, Nick Chubb, and then Duke Johnson, who I think is super underrated.
Yeah, Duke Johnson's really underrated. He's a matchup guy, and I love Chubb coming out of college. They have some pieces, but a lot of them are going to be playing together for the first time, and they're going to be playing in a new offense. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely some growing pains there, and you'd love it if you had Joe Thomas at left tackle as opposed to Sean Coleman or Austin Corbett, but I think there's a lot of opportunity here. I think they could be at least a fun team to watch on offense, where when it does come together, they could look really, really intriguing. Well, Ted, always a pleasure to have you on. Of course, you are a frequent contributor to the podcast. Where can people check out more of the work you do covering the NFL?
Right for The Athletic, and you could follow me at Twitter at @FB_FilmAnalysis.
Awesome. Well, Ted, always a pleasure. I'm sure we'll have you back on during the season, but thanks so much for hopping on the show today.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. We have more NFL podcasts coming later this week, actually. I think we're going to get to our player props, our annual player props with Chris Brown. I'm really excited about that. And this is going to be NFL for a while. We're going to be previewing the season, so unless, I don't know, you know, Bryce Harper gets traded today or something as we record this on Tuesday, I think it's going to be football pretty much for the foreseeable future. So thanks so much for checking out the show during the leaner months when we kind of hit some other topics, hit basketball, hit baseball, hit soccer, hit, I believe, hockey as well, the Sean McIntyre. Yeah. But, of course, this is a football show at its heart. We're going to do a lot of football over the next few months. So hope you guys are enjoying it, and more podcasts coming later this week.